You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, happy Friday. It's Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. Happy Passover. Happy Easter. Happy, and happy birthday to Kat Waters, who works with us on this radio show every week. And she just celebrated her 21st birthday, 19th birthday. I'm not sure what it was, Kat, but I'm really happy to have you here on the program. And I'm glad you'll be giving a little short update on Occupy, maybe in a few more minutes, because I've got some work business to do here. We want to pay tribute as we begin today and remember and honor Gil Noble, the host of that pioneering TV show on WABC, Like It Is, a program that was forthright, willing to cover issues that the network considered controversial. There were many instances of people in the black community demonstrating outside of WABC when that program was threatened with censorship or cancellation. I was on that program a few times. I knew Gil Noble as somebody who was really committed to offering a perspective and offering points of view, not just about black issues, but about American problems and global issues. So we want to send our condolences to Gil Noble's family and to remember and honor him as the kind of broadcaster we need on the airwaves here in New York. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. This is News Dissector Radio every week at this time. Our number, 888-874-4888. We actually are having on a tremendous set of guests today. First, Gerald Colenti, the trends researcher from the metropolis of Woodstock, New York, who's going to talk to us about some of his predictions and projections. And then later in the program on this Passover Eve, we're going to hear from Rabbi Michael Lerner of the League of Spiritual Progressives and the editor of Tikkun magazine. So we have some very powerful folks here, but we're moving on with our program right now. Please join us if you will. It's time to occupy the airwaves on PRN-FM.
In the entire planet that are more unequal than the United States in the distribution of our wealth.
This is corrupt!
Bankers, corporations throw the country into the gutter like dice. Whatever comes up, they win. Politicians are paid off to keep the game running. There's just no way you're going to be competitive in a rigged game. Some of the best people we have will never get a shot.
Something wrong in America, that's for sure. And one of the reasons that they don't really discuss it fully in our media, in part, is because voices like Gerald Colentes, who's the publisher, editor of the Trends Journal, doesn't get the airtime he deserves, although he is on the air quite a bit, and he has made some projections and predictions that turned out to be true. Welcome to the program. Thank you, Catherine, for organizing this. Gerald Colenti, how you doing?
Oh, great to be on with you, Danny. It's been a long time since we last saw each other in real life person.
I know, and I've been following your meteoric rise into the stratosphere, if you will, of trends projectors and trends analysts on many different networks from Fox to RT. And you were able, you know, I think, to explain clearly a phenomena and issues that don't get the attention they deserve, because we are focused on the now, reporting the news. This happened today. This happened a minute ago or tomorrow. But we don't see how trends operate. Explain that to us a little bit about what you look for at the Trends Journal to try to analyze and to offer to the public.
Well, current events form future trends. And each of us are doing what we're doing in life because of the decisions that we've made. And it's the same thing every time a policy is made, whether it's locally, statewide, regional, or federal, or around the world, there's fallout from it. There's implications. But we brush past those, particularly in the media, and go to the next hot subject. And then, of course, in the U.S. particularly, we're junk food, junk news, and as well as junk food, junk news focused. So they miss the important stories. And so what we do is, I'm a political atheist. So I only look at things for the way they are, not the way I want them to be. And in understanding of current events, we look for how is it going to play out. If they're, regardless of who wins, and by the way, and the other motto that we have at the Trends Journal is think for yourself. This is only the way we see it. We encourage everybody to use their own mind and see it their own way. But as this election is playing out, we are already seeing it in our research that people are telling us they're going to be voting for a lesser of two evils. Oh, how wonderful. You're going to vote for... So in thinking of being a political atheist, I'm not going to vote in this election. I don't participate in this criminality. So I only look at things... I consider myself a citizen of the world.
Well, I don't know if you saw this.
And I don't believe in my country right or wrong, myself right or wrong, my friend's father, family right or wrong, and whether it's Jesus, Muhammad, or Buddha, the Quran, or the Bible, there's no salvation for the hypocrite. So when people are doing an analysis of geopolitical, political, economic news, they're doing it with an agenda, and we're agenda-free.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because, generally speaking, if any analyst ever gets on the air these days, I'm going to ask Catherine why she's so impressed with your work in a minute. But, you know, the only analysts who seem to get on the air these days are people who are analyzing polls with a margin of error, you know, that you could drive a Mack truck through and somehow seeing in those polls, you know, kind of the prophecies about what's going to happen, when often the poll data changes dramatically. It's up and it's down week after week. And yet, instead of real analysis or somebody really explaining something to you, they're really referring to numbers. You know, it's like news about politics is like sports, you know, who's ahead and who's behind.
Yes, and also what they're doing when most of them, a lot of them, as I said, have an agenda. And what makes our work so different and accounts for much of our accuracy is that we look beyond the one field. So you're mentioning politics. They look at polls and they stay in the political field. Same thing with economists. They look at economic data, weigh it, but they're not looking changes in the family, changes in society, changes in business, changes in the environment. And it keeps going down the list and up the list. So we look at over 300 different trend categories, all with the understanding that all things are connected. And they can't break away. They still look, here we are talking in the 21st century. You go to Harvard, Princeton, Yale, go to Stanford, go to any one of them. Tell me, Columbia, NYU.
I did, Gerald. I have to confess.
Tell me what of those universities have trend forecasting courses in them. I could tell you, none, zero, nada. So what I was saying about
what about zilch? Let's not forget that either.
Okay. So now, as I'm talking about the being a political atheist and not having anything to do with these parties, what I am going to demand, regardless of who wins, is that I take the position in the cabinet of whoever wins as Secretary of Trends and Consequences, because no one ever looks at the consequences of these criminal psychotic acts that are being committed by the Gambinos or the Bananos, or, to put it in today's language, the Republicans or the Democrats. And people refuse to grow up about this. And I am so tired of hearing Obama apologists, and particularly the women. You could run down the line of Obama backtracks and atrocities, and you know what they'll say at the end of it? Oh, I like Obama. Same thing they used to say with Clinton. As we're talking, as you well know, I don't have to tell you or the audience on Progressive Radio, that, you know, isn't that wonderful, the new strip search that the Supreme Court, and what do they do? Oh, that right-wing Supreme Court, those conservatives. Hey, wait a minute. Who was the friend of the court?
Couldn't have been
the Obama administration. No. Oh, how about that new executive order that Obama just signed? Oh, you know the one that let's declare martial law?
You know, I hear your frustration with all the hypocrisy that's out there. Catherine, you wanted to jump in.
Oh, Gerald, hi. I listen to you all the time on the radio. That's why we wanted to have you on the show. I wanted to address, you know, because you literally uttered, you know, the same word that I did when you called them junkies. You know, can you, like, elaborate a little bit on that? Because, you know, all my life I always saw people around me were always about money, and they just always gave money, in my opinion, more credit than it deserved. And I always kind of saw, you know, like, to me, everything was more about health. Like, if you don't have health first, right, like, your money, because that's what it sounds like you're saying to me. Like, they just use their money to skew everything, you know, to come up with, you know, the way, like, so that it fits their completely skewed, you know, out of alignment mentality, you know, so they're just buying the feedback that they want, even when the horrible consequences are right in front of your face.
Yes, they're money junkies.
Right.
Look who this country idolizes: Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, you know, and every rich Schwartzman. Go down the list. Everybody that's a billionaire is wonderful. And it's this bottom line mentality, and the bottom line has really brought us to the bottom line. I'm going to send you a link after I get off the air. Ulster Magazine up here did a cover story of me at my place in Kingston, and you'll see the walls are filled with art. I mean, did anybody ever forget a thing called the Renaissance? You know, that art is a way of finding the true meaning of the human spirit. How could that have all been lost? They don't teach it in school anymore. No, we've got to cut the budget. I got an idea. Let's, we need more math and science. That's what we need.
You know, Gerald, we have up on the wall right in the studio, right to my left as I look over, none other than three Marxists. One is called Harpo. One was called Groucho. You know, the Marx brothers, you know, a little comedy, a little humor, and a little insight, a caricature of what's going on. When you talk about money, I don't know if you saw this article in the New York Times by Steve Ratner, New York Times reporter turned millionaire, turned car czar, turned critic of the Obama administration to some degree. He's saying that new statistics show an ever more startling divergence between the fortunes of the wealthy and everybody else, and the desperate need to address this wrenching problem. Even in a country that sometimes seems inured, it's a good word, to income inequality, these takeaways are truly stunning. In 2010, as the nation continued to, quote, recover from the recession, if that's what it is, a dizzying 93% of the additional income, 93% created in the country that year compared to 2009, that's $288 billion, went to the top 1% of taxpayers, those with at least $352,000 in income. That delivered an average single year pay increase of 11.6%. to each of these wealthy households. So this, you know, trend about income inequality seems to be getting worse, not better. And yet, generally speaking, we read today in the New York Times, the Republicans raised over $100 million to fight Obama. Obama, you know, raised probably as much and now has to raise more. And that's where all this money is going into a completely dysfunctional political race. Your thoughts?
Well, of course it's politically dysfunctional. It's a presidential reality show. I mean, that's all this is. You know, it's bad. It's right up there with Jersey Shore, as I look at it. I mean, what would self-respecting human being, again, would vote for a lesser of two evils? And talking about income inequality, and you know, of all the industrialized nations, the gap between the rich and the poor is the widest in the U.S. than any of the industrialized nations. And when you talk about income inequality, we have to understand, and looking again at the bigger picture, what's going on. The first great war of the 21st century has begun. It's class warfare. Look what's going on over in Greece. You know, people, retirees setting themselves on fire, committing suicide, robberies virtually every day. Look what's going on in Spain. Look what's going on in Portugal. Look what's going on in Italy. Look what's going on in Romania, in Hungary, in Lithuania. Look what's going on around the world. The money junkies are in control of the cash. When I was a young man, Danny, getting into the business in the late 1960s, the gap between the CEO and the average worker was about 25 to 1. Today it's about 525 to 1. And I want to make this really clear so everybody that has a brain between their ears could understand this. the only reason that these people are making this kind of money is because of the dirty deals they're doing, not because they're such geniuses. Capisce, like that slime ball John Corzine, the former head of MF Global, that brought the company down and that raped segregated accounts like mine of my money, and he can't find
Gerald, don't you understand that that he received an email from someone who received an email from someone who received an email? Indicating that they weren't clear what was in either emails, and that they weren't sure that there was customer money there. You can't blame him for not getting this information when he really sincerely tried to get it. Isn't that true?
Oh, of course. And they didn't one day, you know, they needed $200 million really quick. And you know, nobody told them to take it out of segregated accounts. Where did it come from? Petty cash? I mean, what am I, 6 years old? So what I'm saying, Danny, is that the whole system is rigged. Anybody out there thinks that you're going to work hard and make it to the top, yeah, you got an outside chance, but really an outside chance, the way things are twisted. Look at yesterday's New York Times, that guy over there in Jersey, Christie, giving all this money, and the same thing in New York, to these big corporations. They're going to create jobs. So we're going to give them tax breaks, loan guarantees, plus millions of dollars. Hey, all of these fat mouths out there, all my life, I've been hearing about capitalism. You rise and fall on your own merits. No, no. You only rise and fall on your own merits if you're not a member of the club.
There, in fact, you know, the markets have collapsed. Why? Apparently because they were disappointed that the Fed did not introduce more stimulus into the economy. In other words, government support for the economy, i.e. Their share prices. So, you know, we have a situation where the people who on the one hand are attacking, you know, government, you know, because it's somehow interfering with the free market, are the first ones to line up when there's a bailout or when there's some sort of, quote, stimulus that they can get rich off of. And when that doesn't happen, suddenly the markets come tumbling down like Humpty Dumpty. And that seems to be what's happening. Now, let me just, you know, we're hearing how passionate you are, how committed you are. You don't mince words. You don't, you know, kind of stick to footnotes. I think everyone appreciates that. But there's something about you that I didn't realize until a few moments ago, that you are a close combat practitioner and a black belt trainer. What does that mean? You know, tell us about your interest in martial arts, because I don't think people know that side of you.
Well, I began it actually in the early 1980s. It began with Tai Chi, went to Okinawan Te for several years. And then I met a fellow up in Nanuet, John Perkins, attackproof.com. And it's close combat. It is the real deal. And it really changed my life. And I always say it was the glue that put everything together, because, you know, sometimes you're kind of afraid to say something, you know. And I'm very respectful to people. You say what you want, I'll say what I want, but don't tell me I have to believe what you want me to believe. And that's what gives me, I guess, the courage to say what I really believe, in the sense that if it's going to come down to a fight, man, you know. So the close combat is something that I've been very, very much a big part of for many, many years. Matter of fact, I used to teach it for several years up here in Woodstock, and now I'm in my mid-60s, so I don't teach it anymore.
I don't know, but you look pretty tough to me. You seem to be holding on pretty well there, Gerald. We appreciate that. I mean, we should remind people, you know, that there were a number of different issues that you forecast quite accurately: the panic of 08, the collapse of the Soviet Union, the last two recessions, the dot-com meltdown, the 1997 Asian currency crisis, the 1987 world stock market crash. Now, how is it that you were able to forecast these things when so many experts were not? I mean, of the American Economic Association members, roughly around 15,000, only 15 predicted the meltdown in the markets. Why is that?
Because, again, they have an agenda. Most of them work for companies and are selling something. I'm beholden to no one. You know, I'm alone. You know, I was married for many years. I'm single. And I don't have any children. And everybody I love is dead. So my definition, again, only speaking for myself, my definition of hell is taking that last breath and knowing that you lied to yourself and you're not the person who you said you claimed to be. So when I look at things, I'm trying to do it with as much honesty and integrity as possible. I have nothing to sell. And when people ask me, when are things going to change? You know, I believe in that wonderful Hindu saying, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And anybody that's really practiced at anything, as you're talking about close combat, you know, I found a teacher, you know, John Perkins. And my belief is when the people are ready, the leaders will appear. And I don't believe the people are ready now. I don't believe they're morally ready, spiritually ready, physically ready, philosophically ready. And when enough people find the greatness within themselves, and by the way, that is the total purpose of our work, just so to make this 100% clear, the letters that we get each day, the emails, the ones that I love the most are when people say, thank you for inspiring me. Because when people find the greatness within them, they have the courage, the dignity, the integrity, and the self-respect to be themselves, to think for themselves, and find the greatness within themselves, and they don't take crap from anybody else.
Well, here we are.
And right now, boy, it's the next cover of the Trends Journal, which will be out on before Friday the 13th. It's going. Oh, this will get us in a lot of trouble. It's going to read: next train to Auschwitz, all aboard, kiss those calories goodbye. And it's going to be posted very soon. And you're going to see a bunch of herded Americans getting on these red, white, and blue cattle cars. Because that's the direction this country is going into. Don't call Obama a socialist, a Marxist, a communist. Let's call it by its true name. The merger of state and corporate powers, by definition, is called fascism. And fascism has come to America. As we can see now with this new Supreme Court ruling, you could go through a stop sign. They could say that you have alcohol on your breath. They could take you to jail and make you take your clothes off, bend over, spread your legs. That's what's going on in America, one after another.
It's definitely, you know, a culture of intimidation and harassment, with more and more power being, you know, allocated, centralized in police agencies and various authorities. We're seeing this overreach continue. You know, the president, the man who became president to close Guantanamo, didn't close Guantanamo. And in a sense, Guantanamo as a concept, as an idea, has spread, you know, throughout the world and throughout the country. In the treatment and the abuse of prisoners in this country, we have more people incarcerated in the United States than were in jail in Stalin's Russia. I mean, that is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. And again, people don't want to face these facts. And we're being raped by the government, literally now, if we get in trouble. But again, justice is only spelled wrong. It's J-U-S-T-U-S, just us. And we're being robbed in broad daylight by the banks.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because there's an item in the New York Times today which is very interesting, which basically is saying, get this, that there's been a crackdown on tax havens. That is to say, people who have been stuffing their money in the Cayman Islands and offshore in Monaco, White Bay and the British Virgin Islands, et cetera, basically to avoid paying taxes on it. Now these secrecy laws are beginning to fall to global pressure. And guess who the beneficiary is likely to be? The big bankers now want to move that money. Private banks and wealth managers are scrambling to convert so-called black money, assets that have not been disclosed, into accounts that are above board than that they can make money on.
Yeah. What a surprise. You know, just so people understand, the banks have no money. This is all leveraged junk, and they're holding on to a lot of bad debt. They need bucks. What's going on, for example, with the European central banks? They've dumped in since around Christmas holidays over 1.3 trillion euros to keep the banks afloat. So yes, you're 100% right. What they're doing is they're going after these people to force them into putting money into their system because the banks are broke. And many of them are. This is just being, again, who would have ever dreamt that they would have come up with a term like too big to fail to bail out the banks?
Yeah, my term, Gerald, money, by the way. My term, Gerald, is not too big to jail. But
too big to jail.
It sounds like they're holding up the country with a finger in their pocket. You know, like they have everybody convinced
and with
it's
the
a
Supreme
gun,
Court
and
rule, the finger is not just in the pocket, you know. If you know what I mean, okay.
Oh, by the way, happy birthday.
Thank you, Gerald. I just want to ask you one quick question. You know, you were talking about consequences before, but I mean, like, what if, okay, you know, the powers that be, they are getting the, you know, consequences that they actually want. Like, they take those consequences to be a good thing, you know, in their favor. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, yes, you're right. But also, you know, they are very shrewd. But they're also not very smart sometimes.
I
know they're
agree.
Over their head. You know, I always make it clear as to who are these people? Who are they? Who, you know, these are the same people we couldn't stand in high school and college that wanted to be class president and head of the student council. The suck-ups, the brown noses, the glad-handers, the insincere, the overly ambitious.
The insecure.
That's all they are.
Right. They're insecure deep down inside, and they just need more and more and more to cover it up.
Well, Gerald, I mean, we could go on, and I'd like to go on at another time in more detail about some of the trends that you're analyzing. Could you just tell the people listening how they can subscribe to and get in touch with you, subscribe to the Trends Journal?
Sure, trendsjournal.com. And Danny, we know that people are having a difficult time. I mean, so many people are. So we have a discount request form there. It's not easy information. And we try to make it available to everybody because the future is not going to be very bright. What the Trends Journal is there is to prepare you for the future so you can take proactive measures. And also, as I said, to help you find your future as well. So, and thank you very much, Caitlin and Danny, and happy Passover and Buona Pasqua, as we say in Italian.
Okay.
Any last ideas on how to wake the people up?
Yes. Just keep doing what you're doing and keep doing it better.
Well, thanks so much. Gerald Colenti, The Trends Journal, live here on News Dissector Radio on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. We're coming back in a few minutes with Rabbi Michael Lerner. Listen to this.
Chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa.
Schechter here on News Dissector Radio on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. We're at 888-874-4888. If you want to join the conversation, the free call, 888-874-4888. This program is an extension, if you will, of my blog every day at NewsDissector.net, where I try to take on, dissect, discuss, and offer a counter-narrative to what's happening in the news, and we try to, you know, get into that on this program as well. Our guest in this half hour is somehow has not been located somewhere in Northern California. There is a rabbi wandering, in the desert, looking for a telephone. His name is Michael Lerner. We hope we'll be able to bring him on the program soon enough. But for starters, as the spring is here, Occupy Wall Street and the Occupy movement is resurgent, active, maybe more active than it was. Kat, you've been part of this movement. You've been around it. What's the latest?
Okay, today, which people can go to as soon as the show is over, Stand for the Poor at St. Patrick's Cathedral. That would be today, Good Friday, 14 East 51st Street. Join Catholics United and Occupy Catholics this Good Friday as we take a stand for the poor among us at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And then also today, spring training, weekly Wall Street marches. Today, Friday, April the 6th, 2 p.m. at Liberty Square. Every Friday at 2, please join Occupy Wall Street, and they will converge in the streets once again and launch the first in a series of spring training and marches from Liberty Square to Wall Street.
Well, the big preparation now is for May Day, the 1st of May, which is a holiday, a worldwide international workers' holiday, but in the United States, through the intervention of the powers that be to try to take the idea, any radical content out of the idea of May Day. May Day was changed first to Law Day to support the system as opposed to have workers, express their own needs and demands. And then they created Labor Day the first Monday in September, which is a day of barbecues, not barricades. So the whole idea was to depoliticize all of this, and Occupy is bringing back May Day this year, and they're planning and hoping for a general strike. Whether or not a general strike can be organized in so quickly, I don't know. I don't know if they have the capacity to organize it, but I do know that they are on the case here and are very serious about it.
There's also one tomorrow, Saturday, April the 7th. They're calling it NYC Kiss-In Against Student Debt and Corporate Greed. So that's going to be at Union Square tomorrow, 10 a.m. till noon. If the banks can make out like bandits, so can we, is the header. And train the trainers, educate the educators, facilitate the facilitators. That is going to be Sunday, April the 8th, 5 to 8, 220 East 23rd Street.
So at any rate, these are ways you can get involved with Occupy. Occupy is a idea, really, which has spread quickly, not only in the United States, but around the world. I have an essay up on the Huffington Post and many other outlets, basically saying maybe it's time to occupy the IRS for tax day, or at least to call attention to the lack of equity, the lack of fairness in our tax system, where, you know, people can not pay taxes if they're very wealthy and find ways to shelter their money, avoid, the brackets that they really should be in. And this is something that is a concern, of course, of everybody fighting for economic fairness and justice, the tax codes. And it's something that's sort of being debated. President Obama is attacking the Republican tax proposals. Other people are saying, well, the Democratic tax proposals are not so great themselves and that there isn't much of a difference between the two. That's what David Brooks argues today in the New York Times. I don't usually trust his political judgment, but it's a point that is worth exploring, Catherine.
Also, April 14th, Spring Awakening, Occupy NYC People's Assembly. Join Occupy Wall Street on A14 to kick off exciting spring and summer events. April 14th, New York City will converge on Central Park to unite with organizations and activists to create a transformative citywide mass movement. The day will give individuals an opportunity to connect with organizations and foster ongoing collaboration of groups working on common issues. And you can find the event. There's a Facebook page event for that.
Well, you know, again, Occupy does seem to come up with some very creative tactical ideas and suggestions. There are people involved, across the spectrum on various issues. The question, of course, is can this movement rediscover a kind of mass presence? Does it need to be occupying a park in order to do that? They commemorated the six-month anniversary formally with a march across the Brooklyn Bridge. That's where Occupy activists were arrested when they first tried to do it. But is the goal here to just confront the police and show them that we have our rights and they try to take them away from us? Or are we really fighting for some sort of agenda of economic justice?
I recently, sat in on a really good, group discussion. And from what everyone said, it seemed to the outcome of the discussion was a space, that you do need a space. I mean, that's sort of what it's coming down to. I mean, everything is so crowded. The 1% like own everything, and it leaves the little guy with like no space to even, to speak, to even collect your thoughts, to discuss. And, like without space, you have no right. Free space. Hello. Like, how could you have freedom without free space?
We see that the parks, controlled by the Parks Department, controlled by the mayor's office, is making it very difficult for people to peacefully assemble, people to have protests and the like. And this is something that I must say, is getting more and more serious, because how many thousands of people have been arrested in these Occupy protests? Do you have any idea? It's well over 6,000, 7,000 people.
Right. I mean, they're just taking the way the rights of the little guy more and more, being that they moved to their new location now at Union Square, they have they set up this group. It's called Eviction Theater, because every single night now they still have to deal with, being evicted now out of Union Square. And, they've set up all kinds of they're doing something called like hide and seek, like with the cops, like they hide and the cops just take their stuff. Like, they're trying to make light of things so that they're not expending so much of their energy, just fighting the NYPD every single night.
Well, again, the NYPD is a military-style organization commanded from the top by Ray Kelly, who reports to Mayor Bloomberg. And this is not an organization that's democratic. It is an organization that's divided along class lines between the so-called white shirts, the supervisors, and the more blue-collar guys who are part of it. But, they've shown the blue-collar workers, who are somewhat sympathetic to Occupy, that they actually will be rewarded for their efforts. And there's been $17 million in the last few months in overtime pay that's gone to the cops who are patrolling, the empty streets around Zuccotti Park.
Heaven forbid they should take even a fraction of that money and energy and effort and put it towards, like the real criminals, and finding out and arresting, one person from Wall Street or one person from Bank of America, the true criminals. I mean, how much more blatantly in your face does it have to get for people to, I mean, it's time to get in shape. I mean, it's like, right, it's spring. It's time for people to really get in shape. And it is scary. There's no question about it. But if people just keep doing the same thing, we're going to just keep getting the same thing.
Well, there seem to be, two theories of our democracy. One is that the only duty or opportunity that a citizen has to influence anything is to vote once every 4 years for president, to vote for lesser offices, vote perhaps in primaries. But that's it. In other words, vote for representatives, not for your own participation in things. The other model, the Occupy model, which is really a people's organizing, bottom-up model is to try to create organs of people's power, people's involvement, people's decision making, you know, with some sort of democratic character to it. And this is the you know, very thing. For years, you know, we heard people denouncing political left organizations as being, you know, authoritarian, run from the top, et cetera, et cetera. Now that there's a democratic mass movement, in a sense, the system is ever more hostile to it. And we have, you know, Chase, you know, giving donations to the Police Benevolent Fund. We have cops being hired for extra duty, you know, watching and protecting bankers. And meanwhile, the city itself seems to be in a collapse mode in terms of certainly jobs, education, civic services and the like.
Well, just like yesterday, I was able to go. They had one on Wednesday, too, but, you know, I didn't go to it because it was my birthday. But they had one yesterday down by 44th and 45th Street on 8th Avenue, because they were protesting, you know, getting money out of politics. There was a talk in there at 305 44th Street, I believe it was, you know, and I made like my first Occupy sign, you know, which said, you know, get money out. You know, it's GMOP. It's part of one of the working groups, you know, getting money out of politics. And, you know, I drew like a $20 bill on the sign, and underneath it, I put, you know, AKA, also known as, you know, a debt note, you know, just so that people know that money is a debt note. You know, I don't think a lot of people know that. And so if corporations can just flood, you know, their money anywhere they want to, you know, to buy, you know, campaigns and, you know, everything else, where, you know, they're literally putting debt. They're injecting debt into things. They're not putting money because, I mean, money most people equate with being, you know, a value thing. And now people need to get it in their minds that money is not, it doesn't have value. It is a note of debt. So that means where it goes, debt goes.
You know, and as you and Occupy and others are fighting to get money out of politics, the Republicans and the Democrats are fighting to get more money into politics. The New York Times today on page one, basically big turnaround on fundraising for GOP panel. $110 million closes gap. Listen to this. Once teetering on the edge of bankruptcy and irrelevance, the Republican National Committee has raised more than $110 million over the past 15 months and retired more than half its debt, accumulating large cash reserves that could give Mitt Romney a critical boost later this spring as he intensifies his campaign against President Obama. With the divisive and drawn-out Republican primary season moving towards a close, the committee reported more money in the bank at the start of last month than the Democratic National Committee, which raised about $137 million during the same period, but also spent far less. So money is the name of the game. Money is making the political world go around. And, you know, we now have super PACs, thanks to the Supreme Court. Corporations are considered people who can also donate to political campaigns. The money is pouring in. Why? Why is it pouring in? Why is so much money being raised? Why do people give so much money? Is it because they really believe in these candidates and what they say in their speeches? Is it because they're really principled adherents to a certain ideology and that they're willing to back it up with their, you know, with their livelihoods and their lives? No, that's not the reason. What is the reason, Catherine?
I mean, I really believe at the core of it, which is why I put that on my sign, like to let people know that money is a debt note. I don't think that people really are aware of that.
Well, let's put it this way.
It's been tainted.
Right, but you're talking about the means, the mode, the modalities, the money. I'm talking about why do they actually put the money into politics? And the answer, my friends, is not blowing in the wind. The answer is that they get something for it. In other words, they're putting it in to get something out and basically to use the government to support their own private, selfish interests, to be able to get laws passed or rules and regulations adopted that are beneficial to them, to get rid of regulations that are costly to them.
But that, I mean, like, that's a total, you know, like, bribery system. I mean, that's,
oh, my goodness. Like, how can you say that? You're sounding like Gerald Colenti.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's totally corrupt. I mean, how can you have a system like that? And how can the people that are, like, taking the bribe, you know, do that in good conscience and, you know, like, knowing ultimately that it's going to end up with, you know, the weakest and the poorest of the system being left holding the bag? I mean, that's exactly what the whole point is.
All right, we're going to try again to reach Rabbi Lerner. The rabbi is still wandering in that desert out there in California, and we haven't been able to reach him. He did notify me that he would be available. But, you know, the problem is the people who have to do calculations, like advanced calculations, you know, oh, there's a 3-hour time gap between New York and California, and then they get confused. Is it behind or ahead? They can't seem to remember those things. And as a consequence, a lot of times guests that agree to come on the program from other places, you know, call up after the show is over and say, I'm ready to go. You know, hello, knock, knock. No, that's been a problem. But we're trying him, and perhaps we will reach him at least to get a little bit of a benediction, a little Dayenu from him, given that the Passover is coming. But, you know, the news, again, is really interesting. Here we have Afghanistan. And I read in the papers like 3 days ago that in Afghanistan they called this the fighting season. In other words, when April rolls around, that's when people come out of the mountains after being frozen in all winter, and they start battling with each other. It's the fighting season, and the Taliban jumped out in front by killing a lot of people. 3 American soldiers were killed the other day. A lot of Afghan police were killed. Now the U.S. will retaliate with probably more drone attacks and the like. But will this lead to anything? A poll in Army Times, which I cite in my blog today, show a majority, basically, most of the people want to get out of Afghanistan. They're not really gung-ho about supporting this war. And, you know, the Afghans themselves are fighting with each other and fighting with the United States for more leverage or who's going to be in charge. Karzai has just opened up an investigation of the looting of the Afghan central bank, an Afghan bank, not a central bank, but a private bank, where, you know, I think a third of $1 billion disappeared one morning. Nobody seems to know where it went. Probably got on a plane by itself and went to Dubai, where Karzai also has a house in the United Arab Emirates. And, you know, so there's been corruption like you can't believe. But it's not just corruption by Afghans stealing. It's also American private contractors stealing. Something like $18 billion can't be accounted for. Hello? Can't be accounted for. You're doing your taxes. I'm doing my taxes. If I said, oh, yeah, there's $18 billion that can't be accounted for, I don't think that would be very persuasive to the IRS. But nevertheless, they're able to get away with it because it becomes a one-day story, and the story is not followed up. There's no, kind of updates on it. And it seems like, basically, the U.S. government is holding on, hoping that the war won't collapse totally, Afghan theater of operations won't collapse before the elections. But it's clear the trend there seems to be obvious, that the war has been lost and that it will be ended. But when is unclear. Part of it is we don't want to be, the Obama administration doesn't want to be the administration that lost Afghanistan. This goes way back, if you will, to the 40s when, you know, there's a big debate in American diplomatic circles. Who lost China when Mao Zedong and the Chinese communists took over China? The debate was, you know, it was like as if it was ours to lose. In other words, the Chinese had nothing to do with it, nothing to say about it. It was all, the whole world is really, a chessboard on which the United States decides what can happen and what shouldn't happen. And of course, there's a lot of pushback and resistance against that all over the world. And as you know, China today has a stronger economy than we do. And in fact, you know, basically without the Chinese investing in U.S. Treasury notes and Treasury bills, guess what? Our economy would collapse. So we're in a mutual, you know, relationship of dependence with the Chinese. They have so much invested in the United States that they can't let the United States collapse. On the other hand, we really can't push China out and take a totally anti-China position. For one thing, you know, the Chinese military is getting stronger and stronger by the day. So we have a situation here, a likely conflict, and various trends forecasters are predicting that there will be, if not a war with China, more of a confrontation with China, because a lot of people in China feel the United States economic overlords are totally irresponsible. They've lost all this money. They're totally corrupt. And that's behind the whole meltdown. And, you know, they want to pull their own money out of the United States. So there's a debate about that in China. There's a debate about China here in America. But by and large, that's pushed to the back pages of the media. It's back in the business section, which most people don't really read. They read the sports section generally first, and then maybe they read the news section, and then maybe the business section. So you have a situation of a country which has a lot of information in front of it, but which is very poorly informed. When Americans are actually asked about what's going on in other countries, or who's the leader of such and such, they don't know. I don't know if you remember Jay Leno used to go out, you know, out in the streets of Burbank, California, with two pictures, you know, and he would ask people, like, who is this? And he held up a picture of Jimmy Carter. I don't know. And then he held up a picture of Mr. Peanut. And people knew Mr. Peanut, but didn't know Jimmy Farmer. Jimmy Farmer was a peanut farmer, which was the point of making this comparison. But the idea is that Americans are very poorly informed. The other day I was up in Boston in front of the statue of Paul Revere. And what I found was that a whole bunch of tourists had no idea who he was or anything about the American Revolution, but there they were in front of the monuments. Anyway, these are issues we will come back to. Perhaps we'll find the rabbi somewhere in California and get him on the program in the future. Happy Passover, happy Easter, happy listening. This program will be on a podcast on the PRN.FM website, which is getting better by the hour for you to check out. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector, here with Kat Waters, the birthday girl on News Dissector Radio. Join us again, same time, same station, next week.
Wish you were soft and smooth.
The world in a
40% of the stations carry no news of the world.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is identification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen. The camera, the sword, buying coke, buying Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
And experience your psychic connection.
We don't have shit to say. We don't have anything to do.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plans to see? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling proof. Flim flam diagram, data jam, handicap caught it. Yo, you bought it. My mind is a profitable thing to waste. You want another taste, baby? Got news good.
What we need to know.
News good.
What we want to know.
News good.
What we think we know.
Got remote control to choose a show. But the more we watch, the less we know. Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor.
Till freedom is a rumor.